Your new Ford automobile might just come equipped with repurposed U.S. currency, flax, wheat, agave fibers, and a litany of organic auto parts. Ford's tenacious quest to utilize sustainable materials includes a brilliant farm-to-car supply chain that's already in place at their Ontario, Canada Ford plant, utilizing wheat straw produced by local farmers. Janice Tardif, elastomeric materials technical expert, and Deborah Molesky, Ph.D., take us on a tour of their labs at Ford's Research and Innovation Center in Dearborn, Michigan.
My name is Debbie Molesky. I'm the Senior Technical Leader of Sustainable Materials and Additive Manufacturing at Ford Research and Innovation Center.
I'm Janice Tardif. I'm the Elastomer Materials Technical Expert.
And you're in the Sustainable Materials Laboratory.
I feel like I'm almost in a jungle right now.
Yeah, you are. So these are a number of the materials, some that are actually in production, and we have the parts here that we can take a look at and talk about their benefits, but then a whole host of materials that we're going to look at for the future vehicles.
I think of a car. I think of steel. I think of synthetic fabrics. I don't think of plants being a part of an automobile.
So right now, there's about 400 pounds of plastic on a typical vehicle. All of that material, in theory, can be replaced by plant-based plastics as well. And so there's over 10% of the car can be eventually replaced, and we don't have to use petroleum for plastics anymore.
Interesting. Tell us about some of the things that are in place now on a vehicle.
So we started way back around 2000 looking at, can we incorporate soybean oil into foam? And so we hydroxylated foams by blowing hot air through them, very simple chemistry, made a soy polyol just like we make a petroleum polyol, subbed it into a formulation, got really bad foam. And so it took years and years of meeting every single performance, durability specification. Now we are proud to say Ford has it on every single North American built vehicle for seat cushions, backs, and headrests.
Made out of?
Soybean oil instead of petroleum-based oil. The formulation has two components, and so we start small. We incorporate as much soy as we possibly can, and then we try to build on that. So today we're looking at algae oils as another alternative because algae grows so fast. Soy takes 3 months, which is way quicker than petroleum, millions of years to form, but algae reproduces 4 times in weight in 24 hours. And so that tells me we'll never be limited by the amount of materials again. So you can see the foams have a really nice feel to them. We're thinking that we may do stuff like incorporate half soy, half algae at some point. We're even looking at carbon dioxide itself. So greenhouse gas emissions, that carbon can be used to make materials for vehicles.
Wow, sequestering.
The ultimate in sequestering, right? Mm-hmm. And so the thing is, it's not easy. You have to start with some pretty bad foams, bad experiments, bad materials, but over the 20 years we've been doing this, you make improvements and you get better and better at meeting all the specifications and the customer, it's no compromise to the customer.
Let's go back in time for a moment. The research and innovation labs 30, 40 years ago didn't exist.
Yeah, so this laboratory was started by Henry Ford in the 1960s. I think that was Henry Ford II. And it was a very, very basic research lab. I've been here 30 of those years, and we have moved more and more toward practical production type research and development. But in those days, it was really basic research. So we were looking at free radical generation rates in water, in heart tissue for the local hospitals, and really trying to understand how materials behave and how they degrade.
So this was really theoretical, basically greater good laboratory that wasn't originally set up to implement new innovations for Ford vehicles.
Right, and I think over the years they realized the value that we could have to the company in researching and providing new alternative materials, safety improvements. The aluminum F-150 came out of this building, how to process that aluminum, what the formulation should be. So a lot of really exciting materials development and powertrain developments have come out of this building.
Interesting. And Janice, you work specifically in materials. You probably dream materials.
Oh, yes, I do. So I've worked at Ford for 25 years in materials and materials processing for that entire time. So right now I'm focused on rubber or elastomeric materials. previous to that, I had been working in paint materials. And so to build upon what Debbie's saying about fundamental research, before I started here at Ford, this laboratory, they invented Electrocoat, which is the primary corrosion protection on all vehicles globally now. So if you remember back in the late 60s, early 70s, you tended to get some big rust spots even in the floor pans of your vehicles. Electrocoat came along. We no longer have those issues. It provides a great corrosion protection, and it's been adopted across the industry. But it started in this laboratory. Eventually, that was sold off to DuPont. Actually, the whole vehicle goes into a big bath, and so all surfaces are coated with Electrocoat.
So how'd you wind up here?
How did I wind up here? Wow, that's a good question. Chemistry undergraduate, chemical engineering graduate school. I was working on diffusion and reaction in thin polymer films, and it just was applied to Ford, and luckily was able to get into this laboratory and apply that same knowledge here, starting off in paint materials.
Over your time here, when you think back, what are some of the coolest projects you've worked on?
Wow, that's a great question. There's been some really interesting ones. We did one, we were trying to, in the paint process, measure the thickness at the plant and have a closed-loop control to adopt the spray applicators to ensure that we had a consistent film build all the way across the vehicle and better quality of the paint than on the vehicle. So that integrated a lot of the chemistry as well as the mathematics and process control and a whole slew of different aspects, and that was a lot of fun to work on that one. But another really interesting one would be trying to come up with a way to improve the corrosion protection on the aluminum vehicle. In the past, when we had put corrosion protection on the vehicle, we used a zinc phosphate. That particular chemistry doesn't work so well for the all-aluminum vehicle, so we had to come up with a new process. And so we used zirconium oxide instead. And that was fun, developing that one.
And that's one of your dip tank ones, too?
That's another dip tank one, yes. Putting the vehicle into a big bathtub.
Mm-hmm. Very fascinating. I'm having a hard time concentrating because I keep getting diverted, looking around at all the cool stuff you have just in this one laboratory.
Do you want to see some of the materials?
Yeah, talk to us about
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so after soy foam was so successful, of course, our team was entirely geeked to make more contributions that reduced our environmental footprint on the planet, and so we went off to wheat straw. Here you have wheat. You take the food portion off. You have the straw left over. You grind that straw into a certain size so that you can process it in the machine correctly, and we eventually implemented that on the Ford Flex bins. They have 20% wheat straw in them. They're lighter in weight. They're better for the planet, lower CO2 emissions. And why the heck wouldn't you do it? I mean, it meets every single specification. So no compromise, better for the planet. The cool thing about it is the wheat was grown in the same area that we had a processor and assembler. We made it in Ontario, Canada, so it taught us to do farm to car instead of farm to table, right? You should utilize what's locally available. We're doing that now, that same concept of farm to car with agave fiber, with Jose Cuervo. And so when you make tequila, which is one of my favorites for the weekend, you have a bunch of this fiber left over, and currently it rots, or the farmers try to burn it to get rid of it. So we're making carbon dioxide everywhere in the world, and we're getting no benefit from it. And so can we take that fiber and incorporate it into car parts? We've molded some. They're being tested right now, but the hope here is to establish a supply chain for our Mexican plants that uses the agave fiber that's right there and available.
And this, what you're holding in front of me is?
This is the where the steering wheel component comes out of it, and so it's the customer won't see the agave right now. It's a reinforcement in the back, mm-hmm. But there are a number of materials we're looking at that could be beautiful enough that the customer will eventually see them. So you can see flax fiber, walnut shells, rice hulls, coconut shells, wood components, bamboo are all beautiful natural fibers. And if we can meet all the specifications, we hope to be able to put them right where the customer can get in and mm-hmm. see them in front of them. So we're looking at coffee chaff, so the outside of the coffee bean,
yeah.
as another waste product that people really don't know what to do with. They burn it, they landfill it. Can we utilize it to reinforce plastic in cars? And I think the answer is probably yes.
Very, very fascinating.
We were able to take cellulose from the tree industry, They took the pulp and used to make paper out of it. We're becoming a more and more paperless society. What the heck do we do with the pulp? We can make high-end composites that replace fiberglass. Really stiff, strong materials out of that tree pulp.
So here you have a...
So this is a Lincoln MKX, SUV, armrest, and a really stiff replacement for what used to be a glass fiber-filled material. So about 20% reduction in weight. Again, why the heck wouldn't you do it, right? You're utilizing something that is in excess, is a waste product, and farmers really want to get rid of it, and they get revenue.
The beauty of this story is whether or not you care about the environment or are conscious or aware doesn't matter, because you're a part of a major international corporation. And the bottom line to them is the bottom line.
Yeah, so the bottom line is the bottom line, but we do have Bill Ford at the helm here. And I think this is a very lucky thing because Henry Ford was very interested in utilizing agricultural products. You can look up on Google and see that he brought the soybean to the Midwest. He was very passionate about working with farmers. They would buy your vehicles. You would, in turn, buy their products and use them. And so Bill Ford, of course, is quite an environmentalist, and he has really made sure that we have resources to do this because he thinks it's the right thing.
That's so cool. So you do have support from the top.
Yes, we do.
Tell us about the items over here.
Why don't you talk about the rubber alternative? That's a cool one.
Yeah, so going back to Henry Ford had a rubber farm he created down in South America, in Brazil, I believe
it
was.
Yes.
But he understood the importance of the supply of key ingredients or components on the vehicle. Natural rubber is one of those. So natural rubber currently comes from a hevea tree, and you extract the latex from that tree and then coagulate that and you get your natural rubber. Currently, about 95% of natural rubber comes from Southeast Asia. We have a lot of competition for who is going to receive that material. So there's been a lot of growth in manufacturing in China, so they're demanding a lot of natural rubber. Natural rubber still is a key component for so many parts on our vehicles, engine mounts, suspension bushings, the list goes on. And so we want to make sure that we also have a consistent source of this material. So the thought is, can we support any efforts to perhaps create a domestic source for natural rubber? So one of those possible sources would be Wayuli. It's grown in the desert southwest, primarily in Arizona, New Mexico, and northern parts of Mexico.
Is it a tree or a bush?
It's a shrub.
Okay.
It's a shrub. And so the latex is actually in the bark of that shrub. We've been looking at that, working with our suppliers of that material, and it smells good. Yeah. So that's really looking like a nice alternative. So we're continuing to work with both the farmers in that area as well as our parts suppliers to see if we can come up with a develop a source and further a demand for that material on automotive parts.
Interesting. So again, the spinoff would be out in the desert in this crappy land, all of a sudden you have this whole new industry of farmers that are
and you know, the other big thing in that those regions is water. And how much water does the crop require? This particular material requires a lot less water than something like cotton or some of the other alternatives. But generally, you know, not a lot is growing out in these regions, so it's a good use of that particular land.
You'll see Canadian thistles, just big and robust and thriving in this.
Look at those.
I hate them.
but I'm going, there has to be a use for these. Just tough.
Really tough material.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're giving us an idea here, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
I'm not picking them. You pick them.
We can find somebody to pick them, can't we? So another source of a potential domestic natural rubber is dandelions. So it's a very specific dandelion. It comes from Kazakhstan. We're working with Ohio State University and a couple of other universities to see if we can domesticate this particular dandelion in the Midwest and places like Oregon that have similar climates. And so that project is going along quite nicely. It's not the most exciting crop in the world because it's a lot. Everything that's interesting is going on underneath the soil. So when you look at a field of dandelions, it's not a beautiful crop, but wow, very valuable material.
How does that start? I mean, forever we all grew up picking dandelions in our front lawn, and one day you or whatever go, hey, that's an idea, and how does that happen?
You know what? I think it's one of those where you look at it and you think about the whole biomimicry concept, and you break that dandelion root in half, and you go, wait a minute, there's something valuable here, right? Latex is here. You know, because we're looking at a very specific kind of dandelion, and it's not the dandelion that's going to grow in your backyard. Right. It doesn't have the same kind of proteins and the same construction as something like Hevea that comes from the rubber tree, but this particular one does. And wow, our testing has shown that it's really interesting. So we have a lot of hope for this. So who knows? You might be driving through Ohio and see what looks like a field of weeds, but they're very valuable weeds.
Very cool. Let's divert for a moment to your partnerships with online corporations, Coca-Cola, that has nothing to do with the automobile industry.
Yeah, so we started working with Coca-Cola on 100% bio-based PET. So PET water bottles, they have a 37% plant bottle, PET bottle on the market. It's Dasani water bottles, and it has the green leaf that says plant bottle. They wanted to move toward 100% bio-based PET. And so they chose companies that they thought had similar environmental desires and goals, and we all came together and have been working on the chemistry of how to make 100% bio-based PET from sugarcane, it could be from corn, any high sugar plant. It's really tough right now to imagine getting these materials at petroleum equivalent prices, but that's the dream, is to be able to make the entire molecule. And Ford would use that for seat fabric and for carpet and headliner. So we use a significant amount of PET as well.
Part of the reason for the partnership has to do with physical plant efficiency, a physical plant.
Yes. So the research is hard, but I always say not nearly as hard as developing that supply chain. Getting the right people to construct a plant and use the right chemistry to deliver a cost-effective green technology. And so a lot of the work that we do here in the lab is try to figure out who the partners should be. Coca-Cola, Procter & Gamble, Ford, Nike, we all use significant amounts of PET. Can we go together and talk about volumes that are large to get the cost down?
Let's talk about supply chain for a moment, because that's another key component, a deal breaker at times.
So if most of the materials you're looking at here today, the supply chain doesn't exist unless we've somehow been able to create it. So how do you convince somebody to go into business to supply into automotive when you're not going to commit to using their material until you see the cost, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's always sort of a game of how do you get the right players in the right place and build that supply chain so that you can grow, and then you have to grind the natural fibers, somebody has to dry them, somebody has to compound them with plastic, and then somebody has to injection mold it. And so are those the traditional people that we use, or is it a new smaller business that would be interested in doing this kind of thing?
And then another deal breaker within the supply chain world is literal physical distance of transportation. So if you can make that efficient, that helps. Downstairs, you have a water bottle recycling bin. Tell us about that story.
Yeah, so to make recycling of plastic water bottles more cost effective within Ford, we use that material for fabric in I think 5 or 6 of our vehicle lines right now, including F-150, which uses a large amount of PET. We collect the water bottles on our product development campus, and instead of somebody sending them to landfill first and then purchasing them from landfill, we send them directly to the supplier who makes our fabric for us. And so that's one way we found to reduce cost, to make it very competitive so that we can get the materials in and do our part for the planet.
So that, to me, sounds like a no-brainer model for the future of efficiency in recycling.
Yeah, I mean, I think other companies could establish employee collection. Maybe some already have it. I thought it was great, and I was really proud of the fact that people can just use their water bottles as norm, throw them out here, and we would make sure that it ended up in an F-150.
That's pretty cool. Well, let's take a little walk and see what else you have going here.
Yeah, so here is an unlikely candidate that you might see in your car one day. This is money taken out of circulation, U.S. dollars. They're shredded. You can go to D.C. and in the stores, they'll try and put them into little souvenirs to get rid of this stuff. But it's burned and it's landfilled. You have two choices. And so we thought, why not be able to incorporate currency, U.S. currency, into plastic parts in the vehicle. And we're hoping, not in vehicles yet, but we're hoping to be able to have coin trays that have money incorporated already into
perfect.
Them.
There's one right there ready to go.
So if you calculate this, it's about $400. So we can say your Ford comes with $400 already in it.
Or you could make them out of $1,000 bills. And then
there you go. Your car really comes with a lot of money. We work with Heinz. They squeeze billions of pounds of tomatoes. Think about it. This is what we get to learn every day. Billions of pounds of tomatoes just for ketchup. And so can we take the stems, the seeds, and the peels and dry them, grind them up? And I would bet that we have produced the world's first tomato-based or pizza plastic material. So not in production as well, but we're trying to figure out. And Heinz has some pretty unique ideas on how they might be able to utilize this material as well. So when we work with these companies, it's not just for Ford's benefit. It's for industry's benefit. Can we all start using all the stuff we burn in landfill? One thing I learned over the many years of working in this, a small component on millions of cars every single year, it really starts to add up. And so like the soy foam, seat cushions, backs, headrests, 30 pounds of foam on a typical vehicle, the CO2 savings start to be significant.
And there's some more plants behind you.
Oh, I don't know if you want to guess this one. We're looking at hemp, Indian grass. This is algae I told you about that grows so fast. Bamboo is an interesting one. It grows 4 inches a day. So certain species, and we're actually going to start growing them here in the lab to look at for visible surfaces and for that whole idea of never running out of materials, never having it scarce. And you said something earlier in the interview. You talked about you can not care for the environment, and I got all crazy because I love caring for the environment. But you're right. Why would you choose not to have alternative choices of material? So this opens up material choices from now on forever, and there a lot of them are waste materials.
Give us some more visionary ideas about bamboo. I love bamboo.
Well, I think it's going to be perfect for Asia cars. Right, because it's grown extensively there. We're trying to make sure that we're using suppliers or farms that are sustainable. So the last thing you want to do, and we work with World Wildlife Fund a lot, I should give them credit. They have an organization, lots of companies come together, and we talk about how do you tell a good farm, a sustainable farm, from one that is not going to be sustainable, may ruin wildlife, may ruin water sources. And so we spend a lot of time with them making sure that who we choose is actually better for the planet. So we're super proud of that. But bamboo is a beautiful fiber. It's really strong, really stiff, and really lightweight. So there's a lot of attractive things about this. When a fiber is lightweight and you put it in plastic, you get better fuel economy.
End use, what do you see it physically being in a car?
I see it as visible trim. So, I mean, why would you take something so beautiful and stick it in the back? Why not have the component itself showing off that beautiful fiber? So people have to get used to that because right now everybody's used to black plastic or gray plastic in the vehicle. We want to change all that and have it be look unique. Maybe even different areas where they farm different materials have different trim. So if you're in an area that grows rice, maybe rice is your interior, and wheat someplace else where wheat is prevalent. I don't know.
That's pretty cool.
Isn't it cool?
Dovetailing back to your Canadian operation and having wheat locally grown and then winding up in a Canadian-assembled Ford car.
Yeah, and that was a total accident. So if you work in an area long enough, you learn by just happenstance or making mistakes. And in that particular case, it was a real light bulb coming off. Oh my gosh, revenue stream for farmers here in Ontario. And then we don't have to use greenhouse gases to ship these materials all over the world. We started looking at the plastic coming from Saudi Arabia, the filler coming from South America, somebody blending it, shipping it back and forth over the ocean before it gets in a car. We could stop doing that.
Okay, more. You're just tantalizing my eyes wherever I turn.
Oh, my gosh. But I don't know what to show you.
Well, down here, what's this propeller looking?
Oh, that one's a way to lightweight plastics that isn't as directly green. This is using the Mucel process, so it's injecting a supercritical fluid, or inside this is a honeycomb structure, so bubbles. So we've been trying to take 10, 15% of the weight out of plastic by just putting bubbles in the center of the component.
And from a cellular standpoint, it could actually be stronger.
Yes, it yeah. could be stronger, yeah. and it has other advantages, like you can hide ribs behind it. You can have thicker mm-hmm. reinforcing ribs behind it and not see them from the front of the structure. So that's something where we'll look at anything and make it into a green initiative. So here's one you might look at. This is called shoddy, which is a strange word for it. But this is the cuttings of the t-shirt industry and the blue jeans industry. Mm-hmm. And we use this in all of our vehicles for sound absorption. So under the carpet, under the headliner. And this material would end up in landfill for sure. But it's kind of crazy how much waste there is. I object to the word waste, right? Because it really is valuable material. We just haven't figured out how to use it appropriately. Once we do this, we're going to save a lot of petroleum, we're going to save a lot of energy, and we're going to save a lot of material in general.
So translating to the bottom line cost of a vehicle, it's for real. It is a significant game changer.
I think this is the future. As we become more and more resource constrained, more and more people on the planet, we're going to need new sources and we're going to need to be more efficient, right, with the resources that we have. And so let's choose some plants that grow really fast. Let's manage the farming so that it is sustainable for everybody. And I think this is a really good solution for the planet.
Let's talk about what you mentioned earlier, biomimicry.
So, yes, we do some wacky stuff here. And actually, 20 years ago, this stuff all sounded really wacky. We have 8 materials, on bio-based materials in the car, so it's not so wacky anymore. Biomimicry is looking at nature and how it solves some pretty big problems. And so it's got millions of years to sort of adapt. And if you look at nature, it's fascinating. Like ant hills cool themselves, they stay within 1 degree Fahrenheit, up and down, no matter what the temperature is outside. Can we use that to develop better heating and cooling for our cars? Because we use a lot of energy to heat and cool the inside of cars and under hood as well. Can you produce textures that are produced in nature? Trying to think of some of them. Butterflies do not have pigment in their wings. It's a structure on the wing that reflects light and causes it to look purple or blue or orange. Why are we painting cars? Could we produce, this isn't easy, right? This isn't easy. I know why we paint cars. But could we look to the future and say, let's produce that surface on our materials and get the color structurally instead of through painting or pigments? So it's really cool.
So I could drive a Monarch.
There you go. Not anytime soon, but you know.
This is so fascinating, just about the use of nature and mimicry.
Well, can I think of more? Well, you know, the gecko. Yeah, the gecko's a good one because he can crawl on the ceiling and not fall down. He can support his own weight just by the amount of surface area. It's not a sticky glue. So can we put body panels onto a car, and then when we want to release them for ease of recycling, can we just, the gecko turns his foot in order to release it. Could we turn the panel in order to release it and replace it? So you can think about all kinds of efficiencies, recycling, accidents.
And we think about it on the tire side too, right? So there's times when you want increased grip on the road, mm-hmm. and times when you don't. So how can you maybe change tires and activate a gecko type adhesion to the road surface? You know, that affects fuel economy clearly, but there's times when you need to have that. So, yeah.
What are you working on right now, and what is in your dreams in the future, things you would like to work on?
Oh, wow. So we're building a lot on the elastomer side and the rubber side of the business of what Debbie's done with the natural products, the sustainable materials. So we're looking at replacing petroleum oil in our rubber formulations with soybean oil. We're looking at fillers and natural fillers to replace some of the existing fillers in rubber formulations. Then, as I mentioned earlier, the natural rubber alternatives, what can we do with those kinds of materials to incorporate those into our products? And what interesting and different characteristics do they give our products then? And that's really what we're looking for, is some kind of differentiating performance. Are some performance benefit from utilizing these materials. Tires are really fascinating. They're very complex components because I won't say a material because it's multiple materials within the tire construction. I think we're going to see some changes in the future in terms of how those are constructed.
Do you see a day on the horizon with no natural rubber in a tire?
Ooh, that's going to be a hard one just because you still need to have that characteristic of being elastic and absorbing all of the bumps in the roads, for example. But I do see us changing perhaps how the tire is constructed a bit so that we can further improve the resistance on the road, what we call the rolling resistance. And that's, you know, the traction. So we want to get the highest fuel economy as possible. And because we need to grip the road, we need to have a little bit of resistance. But how do we change the construction of the tire, especially when you're freeway driving on a nice sunny day? You know, what adaptations can happen with the tire to improve that fuel economy? It might be the wheel tire construction. Right now you have the wheel is typically aluminum or steel or carbon fiber in some cases. And then you have elastomeric rubber, what's contacting the road. Maybe it all becomes kind of one material that is more environmentally friendly or made it constructed of more environmentally friendly materials.
When we first met a few months ago, Janice, you had mentioned on the horizon autonomous vehicles and how that's a game changer that dovetails back literally to your world and your mission.
Oh, absolutely. So autonomous vehicles, we have to really think differently about who's managing those vehicles. Is it an individual consumer? Is it a fleet manager? And then how do we provide the feedback? Or is it a shared experience where you have multiple owners of one vehicle? So how do you provide the feedback on the status of the vehicle? In my case, I'm worried about tires or other elastomeric components. What is the status of those and alerting the customer without being intrusive that something needs to be addressed?
Well, even more fundamental, I know you had mentioned materials, fabrics, they would have to change.
Yeah, absolutely. So especially when you think about interiors, multiple users, and easy clean and
antibacterial.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So all of those are, we're investigating all of those kinds of materials here in our lab. It's fun. It's fun to see where that's going to go. I think it's totally possible, right? And we're on that track.
Yeah. So it might change everything. We don't know whether we want super durable interiors so that they last a long time, or do we want simple interiors to change so that a year or two in service, if the car's operating 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we're able to unzip the fabric and put on a new one. So that's all wide open. Same with carpet cleaning, same with
carpet. Maybe we'll have a different flooring system that we can just hose out.
Right. Maybe blue flooring. Maybe we don't know, right? So, you know, if nobody's driving, there may be a lot of activities that we haven't anticipated in the car, like eating and crumbs and staining and coffee being dropped. And so we have to look at it in a whole new way and try to anticipate what the needs might be.
No, it's been a lot of fun. And we have a lot of interesting conversations here and brainstorming as to what the needs are going to be in the future. It's a good collaboration among everyone here in the lab.
We got the best job around.
Yeah, you do. You guys are dreamers.
Yeah, it has been fun.
Well, tell us a little bit more about the lab. This is like being in college science class.
Yeah, so we have the capability. It is kind of like that. We're the first people that usually look at a new material like this for automotive. We're able to extrude or mix the natural fiber or whatever with the new plastic material. We can form pellets, we can injection mold, and then we can test it by either stretching it or bending it. We can look at the heat properties. So it is kind of like a university lab where we keep iterating when we're not happy with the mechanical properties, and we'll work on a project for years optimizing exactly what application it fits and it meets all the requirements.
Talk about 3D printing for a moment.
So, yeah, 3D printing has been ramping up in our world the last couple of years. We've built quite a laboratory here. We're looking at both metals printing and plastic printing technologies. We have a very large-scale printer that can print things like instrument panels, consoles, so not the kind of thing like you buy on Amazon that prints tiny little parts. And we're looking at where we can use that effectively within Ford. Of course, we can use it for prototyping, but can we start to use it for fixtures in the plant? Can we use it so that our plant workers have more ergonomic things that they use to assemble the vehicle? It can fit their hand size. It'll be lighter in weight because it's plastic instead of metal. And then the eventual is, how can we use it in a production type setting? So printers will have to get faster, bigger, and more capable. But in the end, you hope that you may be replacing some of our standard parts processing methods with a 3D printer instead.
So it's conceptual that if I had a broken car part and I had the tools, I could print my replacement part.
Now, people do that for antique vintage cars. I have a 1970 Boss Mustang. Parts are getting really expensive and hard to get. And so if you can find the CAD model for that, you can print it for yourself and away you go. That may be the way to have a vintage car in the future.
So in our laboratory, it's not just materials research here. We have powertrain research in the lab, safety research, energy harvesting research.
Did you say battery?
Battery research, right.
Fuel cell.
Yeah, there's a whole slew. So we probably have, any component that you can think of on the vehicle, any system, there's a research organization associated with that here in our lab.
Just scale. I mean, this blew me away how large this building is.
Yeah.
How many employees coming in and out? How many people work here? How big is it?
There's about 1,000 people in the building. About half of them are powertrain oriented. The rest of us are materials and processing of materials.
And then on our campus here at Ford, I think there's probably about 11 or 12,000 people currently.
And the campus would be, what does it encompass?
So our campus would be all of our design and release engineers, the design themselves. We've got
product development
here.
Color and materials.
Yeah, some of the testing facilities of components are here on our campus as well.
You guys ever get all together and kind of do a mass brainstorm?
You know what? It doesn't happen as often as perhaps it used to because everyone is so busy. But we really do try to have lectures from specialists here within the laboratory that give talks to and just kind of raise awareness on different research topics that are going on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one person might present what they're doing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And we also have within Ford these university series, like I'll be giving a couple in the next month on what are tires and different, levels of, I think our next one is the difference between summer, winter, all season tires. Yeah, and just to raise the awareness among all of the engineers as to some of the different components, which I really enjoy that too, because I might know something about elastomers, plastics, paints, but I certainly don't know a whole heck of a lot about powertrain. So these are great opportunities to learn.
Yeah, the more people that know what you're doing, the more odds are that they can help or that they are interested and can contribute in some other way.
So you get that call once in a while, somebody from a different department? I got an idea.
Oh, yeah. And we say, come on in, come see the lab, see what we're doing, and then we talk to them. A lot of the ideas of the materials that are being worked on were proposed to us. We didn't go looking for them, right? So we said, all right, we'll give it a shot. We'll throw it in. And if it looks like it has potential, then we'll establish maybe an intern summer project. We have a ton of interns, especially in the sustainable materials lab in the summer. And they collect a lot of data, and then we spend most of the winter going through that data trying to decide, does this have merit? Does that have merit? I mean, our interns this year were looking at lobster shells, shrimp shells. What else were they looking at?
Egg shells.
We'll take the wacky ideas and we'll make these interns give it that first try.
Let's take a look around.
All right. Did you want to head to your lab?
Yeah. We'll wander over there.
And what's this robot-looking item here?
So these are analytical instruments that will tell you at what temperature the material starts to degrade, what kind of vibrational frequencies that material is sensitive to, mechanical properties. So this basically stretches the materials. It can be set up in a bending configuration to see how stiff it is. Mm-hmm. So it gives us all
at
the basic.
Point will the material tear?
This one actually takes a weight and smacks the material to see whether it can withstand it or not.
Yeah, this particular instrument, we do a temperature sweep on rubber from minus 100 degrees C up to 100 degrees C, and we apply frequencies to see how the material behaves at all these different temperatures. Our requirements for our materials run from minus 40 degrees. The material has to perform from minus 40 degrees C to 100 degrees C.
It's rigorous. It's hard to meet. We've also been looking a little bit at ocean plastics as well, which is a really hot area. So can you take the materials that have been already made their way into the ocean and are causing so much problems as far as the wildlife and aquatic life? Can we take those and use them in automotive components?
It would seem that kelp would be a good...
Yeah, I saw that too, that if we're all going to have to eat kelp pretty soon, and that may be another source of fast-growing material.
Mm-hmm. So here we are, another laboratory.
Yes. So in this particular laboratory, we're looking at elastomers. Elastomers, you think of rubber, but rubber is not just the rubber material itself. For example, this particular cylinder shows the amount of different chemicals that are incorporated into the rubber to give the rubber reinforcement characteristics and various performance characteristics. So for a small amount of rubber, we add in a lot of, in this particular case, this is a tire tread formulation, we add a lot of fillers, silica, carbon black, there's petroleum oil, and then of course we have to add sulfur for vulcanization of the rubber, and then a lot of process additives and antioxidants, anti-degradants, and that sort of thing. So we have a lot of chemistry to play with, so we start looking at all of these different components and saying, okay, what other natural materials can we incorporate into the formulation? So we have a lot of effort going on with bio oils. Soybean oil is one of the bio oils that we've been considering and using, and we're actually about to launch a part on a Ford vehicle that contains a rubber part that contains soybean oil. So that's very exciting. We get a lot of support from the United Soybean Board for that work. We're looking at other bio oils, including castor oil, orange oil, cashew nutshell liquid. So there's a whole slew of different materials that we want to have in our toolbox as alternatives potentially to petroleum oil.
There's no reason we couldn't have made these materials originally out of these more sustainable materials. That's the thing that I learned, right?
Right.
It's just that petroleum was flowing and cheap and everybody thought we were never going to run out. And so those were the materials, and it's ingrained in everybody's mind that that's what's good, when realistically there's all these other choices for what's good.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then on the filler side, you know, we use a lot of silica and carbon black in our formulations. Can we utilize other waste streams? Eggshells would be one that's looking quite promising.
What would be an application for the eggshell?
For the eggshells, we could put it into a natural rubber part formulation. So again, it could be something like an engine mount. It could be utilizing it actually potentially in tires one day, maybe, you know, to replace some of the silica. So those are the kinds of things that we're looking at. Recycled tires too, right? We know there's a lot of recycled tires out there. What do we do with those? Can we somehow incorporate that material back into an elastomeric part? So there's several different products that come out of that recycling stream. It could be actually the rubber crumb itself, or it could be when they pyrolyze the tires for energy purposes, what's left is carbon black or an ash material. We've been looking at both of those materials and playing with them in our formulations to see if we can incorporate them and maintain or improve our properties on our parts.
And is this your lab right here where we are?
This is my lab, yes.
This is where you live.
This is where, yes, it is, pretty much. So this is the Elastomeric Materials Lab.
Give us a little quick tour of what you have here.
Yeah, so, I mean, we actually work out of several laboratories. This one is where we keep all of our raw materials. So we have all of our rubbers, our fillers, our oils. This is where we weigh out all of our ingredients. We do a lot of our testing. We have with our eggshells, we want to break them down into very small particle sizes. That's really important to be able to incorporate it in. These elastomeric parts have to have a lot of strength and durability to them, and so we were very, very careful on how we prepare these materials for incorporation into our recipe. Yeah, so then from here we go into our other lab where we actually compound the material. We mix it all up together. It's a big mixer. Then we mold parts and test plaques and do our testing from there.
And keep iterating until you get it right.
Absolutely,
right?
Yes. You're never going to get it right the first time, or it's pretty rare. Then you're really lucky if you get it right the first time. But you apply the knowledge and tweak the components. We do a lot of, I like to call tweaking, but, you know, tweaking in a smart way, right? Mm-hmm. So we're using design of experiments and our various tools to really be smart about how to incorporate these materials.
And again, this is going out there, but I just imagine you off-duty, driving around the countryside. Do you ever have those random epiphanous moments when you're not in the lab going, ooh, this would be a good idea? Your dandelion?
Yeah, I mean, I think you, as Debbie had mentioned earlier, you know, whenever you're out in nature and you see how efficient things are, how you have to be inspired by that.
There's
so it's
not a lot of waste in nature, right?
So then how do we utilize those concepts in what we do?
So a lot of lessons learned from butterflies.
Yeah. Yes, yes. I think it's wise to get out of your normal space, your workspace, and get a kind of a clearer vision by escaping every once in a while and getting inspired then.
And here's what I wanted to show you. So our environmental, our sustainable materials team recently won an award.
Nice.
For our sort of long-term effort, establishing the lab, launching the first materials, in some cases world-first materials in our industry. And this is a letter from that Bill Ford sent me. He
nice.
Also received the award, and I delivered his award to World Headquarters. But I thought it was incredible that he sent a letter saying, I understand my name is on the award, but the credit for this work is all yours.
How cool.
I know, yeah. I know. And so you really feel like this is a family company. This is some place where the top of the house sees what we're doing and, you know, really appreciates.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've been acknowledged quite a few times within the industry. And so we're super proud of the fact that we're sort of viewed as leaders in the area of environmental materials within Ford. And we hope to keep that leadership, and we get a lot of support from World Headquarters and a lot of enthusiasm. You know, a lot of times you feel like maybe the oil prices are low and the government's not so worried about funding environmental initiatives. Well, these guys over there, they pump us up and they said, we're going to do twice as much now. Without those people, we wouldn't stay motivated. We wouldn't keep trying so hard.
That's really cool.
It is really important to have the support, and we totally appreciate that support. It's not one person driving the whole effort. I mean, Debbie does a great job of the vision, but you need to have a lot of people engaged and involved to move the technology forward.
And into production vehicles, right? And keep it in production vehicles and migrate it and get it in other industries. One of the other things that Ford really decided early on was we have patents in sustainable materials, and we were not going to charge a royalty for those patents.
So you share.
Yes. And you know, I've flown down and actually tried to formulate with other companies to get foams that meet their specifications.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't consider yourself truly green, truly environmental, unless you're willing to share it. And so they saw that vision eye to eye. We're very competitive with powertrain. We're very competitive with body construction. But in the green arena, we want everybody to use these technologies.
Well, let's talk a little bit before we go. Well, we talked about earlier, your non-competitive partnerships. We started with Coca-Cola, but there are others that you work together with on visionary projects.
Yeah, so there's some really smart people at Procter & Gamble. They have a wide usage of different plastics as well. Their scientists are very exciting to work with. We've talked with Nike quite often. They have urethane materials for shoe liners and cuttings that we may be able to utilize. And we work a lot in the 3D printing space with many different industries who are trying to move those technologies forward. So we find a lot of excitement. It was super fun to travel around and see other plants for other products that you'd never imagine. I'm used to the car world. And it sort of pollinated all of our thoughts around, oh my gosh, you use this material, we use this material, why don't we work together? Or at least let me use your scrap.
We haven't done as much on the rubber side. I mean, we've kind of kept it with other industries, I would say. Certainly Nike's on our on our radar because of shoe soles. I mean, there's a lot of natural rubber that's used in synthetic rubbers that are used in those applications. But it's been really more like working with our tire manufacturers that are our partners and our suppliers.
Have you guys come up with any epiphanous moments from talking with your non-competitive people?
Well, you really, that Heinz ketchup, the skin, seeds, and peels, that was like over multiple glasses of wine one evening.
No tequila?
No tequila that time, so multiple glasses of wine, and they were making a joke about, how do I get rid of this stuff? And I said, well, why don't you send me some? And I was kind of joking, and they did. And it was pretty sloppy in a bucket, and we had to learn how to dry it and grind it, but realistically, it could be a useful material.
So it's important to have your beers and have your tequila.
Open mind. Yeah. You need an open mind. And really, the tequila thing came from, hey, what about, would you think they'd be interested? So when we made the phone call to Jose Cuervo, we never expected them to be so excited. They're a family-owned company, lots of history, just like Ford. You know, the partnership seemed to be very, very smooth because we had similar heritage, right? And they really were thinking that the revenue from the plant after they get the tequila juice out of it could give farmers enough money to retire.
Wow.
Right? That's, so another revenue stream to support people and improve their lifestyle. And I love it.
It must be awesome for you guys to have such a rewarding job where you don't have to wait 20 years for the results.
And we kind of invented the job. We were just allowed to do it, right? I was working in the traditional plastics arena, evaluating plastics, automotive, standard polypropylene, polyethylene, and my mentors were fabulous, super smart people, and then they retired. And as soon as I was told that I would lead plastics, I kind of shrunk up into a ball and said, I hate plastic. How can I lead plastic? I hate plastic. And so out of that panic came, all right, let's just make them greener. And I've been more and more confident over the years that, in fact, this can be done.
It is being done.
It is being done. It has been done. And we should do more and more of it, right?
I think that's one of the things I've learned over the years as well, is go with your gut instinct and see where it can and take you and have the confidence to see it through.
Yeah, it can be scary, right? You think, oh, these people who invented these materials, they've been so smart and it's all optimized and how are we going to get... You can get there.
Yep.
Just takes a lot of hard work. My name is Debbie Molesky. I'm the Senior Technical Leader of Sustainable Materials and Additive Manufacturing at Ford Research and Innovation Center.
I'm Janice Tardif. I'm the Elastomer Materials Technical Expert at the Ford Research and Innovation Center.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. Our associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon, and Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.